We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey everybody, welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast for Thursday. I'm Jeff Erickson. Today is Thursday, April 22nd, Earth Day. Also, it's going to be Closer Day here because I've got RotoWire's Ryan Roof, who runs our Closer Grid. He's won three out of the last four RotoWire Staff Keeper Leagues. He has done very well in the NFBC, including just winning his way into the NFBC main event for next year. But he's also done well in the RotoWire Online Championship on multiple occasions. Ryan, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on. Been a longtime listener of the podcast, first time caller. So
All right.
Happy to join. Yeah, I'm excited.
Glad to have you doing that. So I know you do a handful of things for us. I know at one point I think you covered the Indians for us. What else do you do?
Yeah, it was actually the Astros. That's how I started with RotoWire about 8 years ago. Okay. Started on the Astros beat and then contributed to the Fantasy Baseball magazine a bit. Just doing the team preview, player outlooks. I've done some columns. I used to do a DFS column a long time ago for DraftKings. I've pinch hit on the Barometer. I've done the Fab article. Nice. So also do the for those that don't know, RotoWire has an Ask an Expert feature. If you go to log into your RotoWire account, go to the More option on your navigation ribbon there, you'll see Ask an Expert. And you can submit your questions, trade advice, lineup advice. So I started doing that in 2014 and still do it to this day. So
nice. And that is one thing that, you know, not everybody realizes all the things we do in the background. And it's great that you pointed out that feature. Ask an Expert, you put your question in. And then we'll get back to you within 24 hours during football season, you know, with all lineup questions. We get back to you before kickoff. So highly encourage you to use that feature, especially any trade questions.
Yeah, context is important, like number of teams in your league, scoring format. Just be sure to include that when you submit.
That's right. That's right. Let's jump off with news of the day. Dinelson Lamet only went a couple innings before leaving with a forearm strain. You know, it's his first start. We were hoping he'd go a little deeper. We're hoping he could make it through after they treated him with kid gloves. And then he had to miss the playoffs last year, got the PRP injection, and he left with right forearm tightness.
Yeah, it's devastating for the Padres. Good thing they traded for all that starting pitching depth this offseason because they just lost Adrian Morahan to Tommy John, who had surgery this week. You know, Paddock hasn't been good either. So, you know, it's a hit to them. You know, Ryan Weathers, I think, has been pitching, but he's, you know, he hasn't pitched a lot. I think he's topped out at around 100 innings in the minors.
Right.
max. So I have to think this injury, you know, pending results of the MRI, you know, expedites Mackenzie Gore's path to the majors.
Yeah, you would think that, but I mean, they've had multiple chances now to call Gore up. And
true.
You know, they haven't gone that route. I think they want to see him develop at AAA. Minor league season starts on May 4th, and my hunch is that they really want to see him work in the minors for a while. I think it will be Weathers for now. I think you'll see Gore at some point this season. I just don't think it's going to be immediately.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Padres lead the big leagues in ERA right now. So, I mean, and that was without Lamet. So,
yeah.
They're doing pretty well. You know, it does hurt Lamet's absence, but you know, they seem to be doing well without him. So
I would highly recommend going and getting Weathers. James Anderson has him pretty high on our prospect list, 49th on our prospect list. He's in our top 300 in dynasty rankings. Yeah, you know, the issue with him is how deep is he going to be able to go into games? He went 3 2/3 right. scoreless in his last start against the Dodgers. But this pretty much cements that he's going to be back in the rotation for, I think, a while now.
Yeah, I have Weathers in a couple draft champions leagues. I actually started him this week.
Nice.
So that's pretty fortunate. Do you have Lamet anywhere or Weathers?
No, I don't have either. I think Weathers will be available in some places. Lamet, I was fading for the price. I needed a big discount. He was one of those guys. I just thought it was. I was rooting for him to beat the expectations, but I was pretty pessimistic.
Same, yeah. I avoided him in draft champions leagues early on. He was kind of going in that Alcantara Musgrove range, and I prefer those guys anyway. And then a little bit later on. In online championship drafts, he went a bit later, but still not late enough for my liking. I mean, that Savali Stroman range, I highly prefer those guys. So, I don't have him anywhere either.
Yeah, I would go out and get Weathers in almost every format. I would even go get them in, 12 team mix, maybe even a 10 team mix. The issue for him is, you know, can he go 5 innings and on a regular basis? I think that's maybe a concern, but
yes.
Aside from that, I think I go grab him if you can.
Yeah, great strikeout rate, solid ratios. Yeah, the concern is the innings. I mean, he's topped out at, I think, 3 2/3 this year was his max. So, you know, maybe he'll go 4, maybe 5. Wouldn't expect much more than that, though.
Yeah, and, you know, thing about him, too, is, you know, a good team, good bullpen behind him. He's going to get some more often than not when they don't face the Brewers, he's going to get run support. So there's that too.
Right.
I wouldn't use him for tonight's start though against the Dodgers. I know he pitched well against them last time, but grab him. And maybe even if he gets knocked around a little bit, you'll be able to get him cheaper in Fab this on Sunday too, which is nice.
Right.
But if you have like first come first serve pickups like I do in one league, I grabbed him. I'm not going to use him today, but I will happily have him on my roster.
Yep, I'm with you.
Let's move on. A's are red hot. They've won 11 in a row. It took a lot of luck yesterday, though. There's a just comedy of errors in the bottom of the 10th inning. And 2 outs. They get to the fault of Alex Colome, he put a couple guys on and walked a couple guys. But then the game should have been over with a ground ball to second base. That was biffed. And then they had a ground ball to third base, and Luis Urias threw one of the worst throws I've ever seen to end the game, a two-run throwing error. So they've now won 11 in a row, red-hot team.
Yeah, it's surprising, you know, especially after their start. You know, it's kind of funny to see, you know, the Astros start, I think, 6-1, and they've been terrible since. You know, some of that's been injuries. But, you know, and Oakland started, you know, poorly and you know, have gone on this run. So it's fun to see. I have a few shares of A's. I have no Laureano, but I have Matt Olson in a few spots, and, you know, he's hitting the ball well. And when he's on, he's on. So, it's fun to watch the ride. I'm sure our friend Scott Genstad's pretty happy about this winning streak.
Although it always comes with a gray lining. In the main, he took Alex Colome as like kind of the last closer in that tier, even though he doesn't like him, and he's lived down to expectations. So it's funny to see him like his bad closer against his team.
Right. Yeah, I have Colum A in a few spots too. You know, he didn't do himself any favors yesterday, but yeah, the defense behind him was awful. I did see that throw from Arias, and yeah, he had no chance to get that at first. So,
what happened there? I mean, I guess it was just a little bit of pressure, but it was almost like, okay, he was trying too hard not to rush it. And I didn't see that, where it's too much time.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, because he started the game at second, and then you move over to third from Donaldson got pinch run for. So, you know, maybe you're just, you know, making that short throw all game, and then you move over there, and it's, I mean, these are big leaguers, though. They should make that throw. So,
Matt Olson homered twice in that game. So did Nelson Cruz. Buxton hit another big shot. Man, Buxton's just locked in when he's healthy. Just stay healthy, please.
Yeah, he's hitting .432. Like, he's like, between him and Acuna, they're my two biggest FOMO players.
Yeah. And he saved the Twins in the eighth inning with a diving catch. I think it was the eighth inning. It was just beautiful diving catch. Rob Medelson of extra bases, and was a huge situation there.
Yeah, great defense, obviously. Every time he dives, though, you kind of cringe just to make sure he gets up. But, yeah, he's a fun player to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, the sprint speed's still there. He's not running that much. I guess it's hard to steal bases when you're hitting at .450.
Right, when you're hitting home runs every time.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, news on Ronald Acuna is he could be back on Friday. This is good news. This was what, you know, when they said it was day-to-day, that was kind of the scenario we were hoping for. Miss the two games against the Yankees, have the extra off day on Thursday, come back Friday. We'll see what happens there. But, you know, if you had to make your moves for the entire week, if you're not in an NFBC format, if you're in a normal format, did you start him this week? Or would you start him?
Probably. I mean, if he was day-to-day, yeah, I probably would have started him and just run him out there.
Three games, yep.
Yeah, exactly. That's a tough call. Yeah, it's always tough because you don't want to take a zero, right? But, I mean, he's so good. I mean, three games of Acuna could be, you know, better than whoever you're replacing him with. So,
yep. Unless that happens to be Adolis Garcia, in which case then you've got some other FOMO going on there. I have FOMO with Adolis Garcia. So do Cardinal fans, by the way. This is another Cardinal outfielder that they traded away that's done well elsewhere, albeit in like nine games so far. But he had himself a series against the Angels. Big homer yesterday, comeback win over the Angels. He's had two of the three games in Anaheim. He looked really good.
Yeah. You know, when he first broke out this season, I had to look him up because I still don't know too much about him. I just know he doesn't get on base too much, but he's off to a great start. I wonder if this is going to be similar to the Aristides Aquino debut, you know, in his rookie year, where he just goes crazy for a while and then drops off, you know?
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah, he had a great series against the Angels, even ran a few times on the base pass, got caught stealing both times, but, you know, it could... You know, while he's hot, he could be a great fantasy asset.
He's not that young. He's 28 years old. I think people need to know that. He came from Cuba, which is one of the reasons why he was old for the level. However, he spent parts of 3 years in AAA, basically two full years, 2018, 2019. He had just three games last year with Texas. When he last played a full season, he had 22 walks, 159 Ks at AAA. When you're striking out that much at AAA, good chance you're going to strike out a lot at the big league level. I mean, I think this is a fun story, but I think you're right. I think the Aquino comparison is apt. I think when pitchers start throwing more breaking things to him, it's going to be pretty ugly.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, and it's, I think he's probably getting this playing time because Leody Taveras has been so bad. I mean, I know you're a Taveras owner like me. That's just been brutal. He's been sitting, I think, three of the last four games. So, you know, Garcia steps in, just starts crushing the ball. And, we'll see how long it lasts.
Yeah. He got, I'll say this, Taveras got two walks yesterday. But yeah, you got to hit for average at some point. He's hitting 93, not 193, not 293, but 093 right yeah. now. I'm a soon to be former Leody Taveras rosterer.
Same.
I think that's coming in right soon. And the thing is, you hold on a little extra long just because, hey, he can run. He does have two stolen bases. Woohoo. But, you know, he's dipping down into DeShields and, you know, Malik Smith territory pretty soon. It's not looking pretty.
Yeah, striking out in almost half of his plate appearances. You know, he does have some pop. So, I mean, who knows, you know, if he can start hitting the ball over 100, you know, maybe we'll reap some of the rewards that we thought we were getting when we drafted him. You know, very fast.
He had four plate appearances yesterday, did not put the ball in play at all. He walked twice and K'd twice. And he had, for that matter, and his last hit was on April 15th. All right, we're piling. I'm piling on, at least right now. we'll move on from that. Leave poor Leody alone. He already knows what he's done. We don't need to remind him about that. Okay, let's move from that and start talking a little bit about your Cleveland Indians. I know you're a big Indians fan. Are you in the greater Cleveland area?
Yeah, I'm in a suburb about 15 minutes from downtown Cleveland. Big Indians fan. It was exciting in the 90s, you know, growing up, you know, with those stacked lineups, you know, Bell, Lofton, Baerga. Certainly a big Indians fan. It was really tough, you know, and I knew this was coming. I knew Lindor was going to get traded, but it was just so tough just to see that come to fruition. It was just so fun to watch, like just smiling, having fun, you know. It was a little disappointing.
Well, yeah, homegrown player, you know, he came up through your farm system, you know, you're like, this is our star. And,
right.
Until he isn't. And it'd be one thing if, like, they traded him, but then were aggressive getting other players, but they weren't.
Right. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how Jimenez and Rosario pan out. I don't know. I wasn't too thrilled with the return, but so it goes. But yeah, big Indians fan. It's was snowing here in the past couple of days, so they got canceled yesterday or postponed due to inclement weather. Still snow on the ground here, so I'm wondering if tonight's game is going to be in jeopardy against the Yankees. They start a 4-game set this tonight, but.
We'll see. Yeah. I mean, they probably are equipped to clear that a little bit quicker there by the stadium, but we'll see about that. The thing about Cleveland is that they've done a great job developing pitchers over the years. Shane Bieber, you know, Zach Plesac, you know, last two outings notwithstanding. Savali have all looked really good. McKenzie and Logan Allen, I mean, McKenzie pitched really well against the Reds. He didn't get much support after that, and that, you know, didn't get much run support or and then a little bit of defensive support to the bullpen in that extra inning game. But, you know, he's pitched okay. He's had to stay healthy. But do they have some secret sauce in terms of development or in terms of, like, finding the right guys to draft? How do they keep on cranking out the pitchers?
Yeah, they just have great pitching development. Ruben Niebla, I believe his name is. They've keep grinding them out, and it's – you know, when you look at the team and how, you know, they approach the season, you know, with the payroll especially, you know, you have to trust in what they've done thus far. I mean, they keep, you know, like you said, Bieber, Savali, Plesac. Before that, it was, you know, Sabathia and Cliff Lee and, you know, all these Cy Young winners. So you kind of have to trust what they're doing, you know, and it's unfortunate, you know, we're back into a phase where, you know, the payroll is minimal. Mm-hmm. They do a wonderful job with on pitching development. And it's exciting. They got a lot of young arms, too. I know we'll talk about the staff keeper league later, but some of their young guys there, you know, made it a point to target Cleveland's young arms because they do such a good job developing pitchers.
I targeted the wrong young Cleveland arm in Cal Quantrill, unfortunately. It doesn't look like he's going to get that chance in the rotation. In fact, he doesn't get that many chances to pitch, period. So He's a cut.
Yeah, it was strange. we were like a week into the season, and he had pitched like an inning. I was like, what's going on here? We'll see. We'll see if he enters the rotation at some point this year. I don't know. I still think, you know, Logan Allen's still pretty young. Early returns have been pretty good. But, you know, they could make a swap there at some point. I know those two are competing with each other in spring training for that fifth spot. Maybe Quantrill enters a rotation at some point.
What's your take on Zach Plesac after these last two outings against the White Sox?
Not worried. You know, it's the White Sox. They got a great lineup. Expect him to finish the season with double-digit wins, ERA under four. I wouldn't expect, you know, a two ERA or anything like that. I would say like 3.6 to 3.9-ish. But still, you know, even with those rough outings, he's only walked two batters in 18 innings. So not too concerned about it. You know, the game against the White Sox where he didn't get out of the first, he just looked like he was just defeated, and you just got to pull him at that point, you know, start over. Sure. So he'll rebound. I'm not too worried about him.
And then Aaron Civale, he's going to pitch tonight after yesterday's game got postponed. He's taking that next step up. Is this, you know, there was some buzz on him going into draft season. It's not like this was totally unforeseen. Were you one of those people that was all over Civale?
Oh yeah, I was all over him. He was after I got my first two-ish starters, you know, in the first couple of rounds, you know, I waited on pitching because that, you know, rounds 10 to 13-ish were just filled with guys I love. Civale, Stroman, Taillon, Kluber, I was on for a minute, you know, and now I'm not so confident in that. But Savali's been great. He's another one of those guys where, again, it made it a point to target him because, you know, the pitching development here in Cleveland. So
who's the next one coming up? Who should we be on the lookout for as when he gets the call, like, ooh, we should grab him?
So I think I've saw some clips of Ethan Hankins. I don't know if he might be next year. Daniel Espino is too far away. He's kind of another one of their highly touted prospects. But
The one Hankins GIF I saw, or you know, it was, I think it was a GIF, not a JPEG, but or video, I guess it was, is when he gave up the bomb to the Reds prospect Austin, I think Hendrick.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and he had this laughing expression on.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, on the mound, which is kind of, because they were working at, you know, they trained at the same facility. Austin Hendrick, that's it. And it was a pretty funny reaction to it there. But then I saw another positive. I read a report on him yesterday that was pretty optimistic. So that was fun to see.
Yeah, I think probably the next one, next man up is Scott Moss. Pitched in AAA last year, or in 2019. 26 years old. Little bit of control problems, but he does have a nice strikeout rate, so maybe he's the next man up. He's a lefty, so maybe we'll see him at some point this year.
Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions, and now they want to help you even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll automatically be entered to win $1 million. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply. Like any good team, hiring the right employees for your front office is just as important as recruiting the best players for the game. That's why you need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
We talked a little bit about the pitching for the Indians. Of course, hitting is the issue. They're good at run prevention, not so great at run scoring. Are we going to see some reinforcements at some point? Is Tyler Freeman going to get the call? How about Nolan Jones? Are we going to see those guys this year?
I would think so. Yeah, it's been frustrating to watch this team hit, you know, near the Mendoza line. I believe they're 28th with a 209 batting average or something like that. It's bad. And it's, you know, some of those guys, Bobby Bradley, I would expect to see. He had a great spring.
Yeah, he did.
300 this spring, a couple home runs. Not sure why they sent him down. Instead, we're rolling out, you know, Jake Bowers, who's hitting under 200, and Yu Chang, who's hitting around 200. Maybe Nolan Jones gets some first base reps in AAA. I would expect him to start the season there. I would think Bradley is probably next in line. Might rejuvenate the offense a little bit. Does strike out a lot. I would think he's up next. And what they were doing in center field, like, was so confusing. Oscar Mercado is expected to open as the everyday center fielder during spring. And then, you know, a couple of weeks before spring ended, he was sent to minor league camp.
Understandably, was an early send down. It wasn't even like a last cut. It was an early cut.
Right. And it was deserved. He had 214 this spring. I think he had like a 300 OPS last year, something terrible. But, you know, they opened the season with this strange platoon of Ben Gamel, who was recently sent to the alternate site. Ahmed Rosario is getting time there after committing about 15 errors in center field during spring. But Jordan Luplo, man, he's been our best hitter.
Yeah.
5 home runs leads a team, 11 RBIs leads a team, crushes lefties. Didn't expect him to see time in center field, but that's where he's been.
Yeah. It's not like Naylor can play center. They don't want Eddie Rosario playing center. So there you go. That's almost a default position there. It's interesting to see what they're going to do going forward. If it's maybe accelerates, maybe Jones plays outfield for all we know. Is Jones fast at all? Can he cover any ground, or is he pretty much stuck in a corner?
I think he was getting reps in the corner spots. I would expect Daniel Johnson to get some time this in center field this season. He had a great spring also. Yeah, he's a prospect. He's 25 years old. He's been in AAA for a couple years.
Right. He's been up and down. Well at every, I think he was on the opening day roster last year, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, got a cup of coffee with him last year, but he's hit well at every stop in the minors, so I don't know, you know. I don't know what he did to the team to make them keep them down for as long. But I think they'll turn to him at some point this summer.
Okay. We'll see about that. So we'll see if there's some replacements on the way, some reinforcements. Doesn't seem like they're going to invest big, that's for sure. But they'll have to go small ball instead. My guess is Ryan Roofy is RotoWire's manages our closer grid. As alluded, he does a lot of Ask an Expert questions. He's a big Indians fan, has covered the Astros for us before. We're going to cover a lot of other stuff. In fact, this is a good time to start talking closers because yesterday there was a lot of closer chaos. Seems like every day there is, Ryan, but yesterday seemed pretty astute. And we'll go to unfortunately, in my neck of the woods and the Reds and Amir Garrett, who is just not right now.
Yeah, what are the Reds doing with this usage? Before yesterday, and the day before, he had 7 days between appearances.
Yep.
I think, that type of long layoff, I mean, you're messing with the guy's confidence a little bit there, maybe shaking off some rust. But yeah, he was not good.
Yeah, he didn't play any of the three. He didn't pitch in any of the three games against the Cardinals to open the season. Got into two games against the Pirates, closing situation in one of them. Gave up a homer on that one. The funny thing is he hasn't had a clean inning yet. Every single inning he's pitched, something has gone on. He had a scoreless inning against the Diamondbacks once, but he walked two guys. This was an extra innings, actually. This is one of his two saves. But even that one was a bit of a roller coaster. They had the game where the triple play game against Cleveland where he gave up three rockets. Just happened to be the third one was right at Votto, and it led to a triple play that bailed him out. I mean, he has not had a good clean outing yet after being completely dominant in spring. And it's his fastball. His fastball is terrible. He can't locate it and it's getting hit when it's in the zone. Almost all the damage is coming against that fastball, and you hate to see it. I mean, his slider is wicked, but when you got to be able to throw number one.
Yeah, I would expect Lucas Sims to get the next couple opportunities. Just until Garrett gets right. I mean, he does. Not to say Garrett will be completely removed from the ninth inning. You know, if there's a lefty heavy lineup coming up in the ninth, I would expect him to get the op there. But you know, Sims has been great. I actually moved him up significantly in our closers and waiting ranks to number four. I think he'll probably end up with more saves at the end of season. It's just, Garrett needs to get right.
Yeah.
He needs that time.
And you know, Sims might not give it back up. That's the thing. I mean, because Sims is really good. Yeah, the only question is, does David Bell want to have the flexibility to use him in leveraged moments? He seems like one of those managers that wants to do that. I think he's trying to do that a couple years ago with Rizal Iglesias, and Iglesias complained so much and kind of spit the bit in those opportunities that he kind of reverted back to using him more as a traditional closer. But I think given his druthers, I think Bell would be happy to have multiple guys get saves.
Yeah, maybe Sean Doolittle enters the mix at some point.
Yeah,
you know, he has experience. Why not?
Right. And then, of course, the wild card is TJ Antone. But I think they want to keep him in multi-inning situations and maybe even start at some point. We'll see about that. Kind of depends on how well Hoffman does.
Right. Yeah, Antone's been exciting. I was on him in draft season. It's been great this year. Just fun to watch.
Just no wins or saves to show for it there. So that's the tricky part. But, yeah, 17 Ks in 10 and 2/3 innings. I'll take that. Three holds so far. If you're in a holds league, he's been gold.
Yeah, and you'll take those ratios every day.
Yep.
So
exactly right. Toronto yesterday had, had their first save since Jordan Romano went on the IL, and it wasn't Rafael Dolis that got the save. Obviously, Romano and Merriweather and Chatwood were on the IL. David Phelps wasn't available. It wasn't Ryan Borecki. It wasn't, Tim Mizea started the ninth inning, but as Anthony Castro came in to get the last out. You know, it's funny because Charlie Montoyo did say at the start of, after Kirby Yates got hurt, he did say he wanted to use a committee of sorts. He's kind of acting like that.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I had to look up who Anthony Castro was. Didn't no
so
idea.
So did a lot of people yesterday.
Yeah. Only had five. Yesterday was his fifth big league appearance, so it was a little unexpected for him to get the nod. But DeLeese worked the eighth against you know, some tough righties, gave up a homer to Xander Bogaerts. I don't think even when Romano comes back, you know, which likely to be next week, I don't think he's prime for most of the opportunities either. I think it's truly a fluid bullpen where, you know, they just, you know, Romano's probably going to be their highest leverage guy, so they'll use him in the most important situations. Sometimes that'll be the ninth, but it won't always be the case.
Yeah, we've had a good chunk of Fab money spent on three different Blue Jays relievers, and they're not netting saves for all those guys. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I bid minimally on DeLeese in one league where I needed kind of a third guy, knowing that you know, it was kind of unsure that he would step into that role. So we saw it came to fruition. Tim Mizza started the ninth against a couple lefties, but JD Martinez was coming up, who's a notorious lefty killer. So that's where Castro came in to get the last out.
Yep. I think Romano gets probably more than others, all things being equal, because I think Merriweather's going to be gone for a while still. But yeah, I think they'll just mix and match as the best they can. So we'll watch that one closely. What do you do in Minnesota? Alex Colomé really spit the bit again yesterday. Gave up two runs in the ninth. The tenth inning was not all his fault. He did put two guys on to begin with there, but he should have got out of it, gotten a win at least. What's your take on the Twins bullpen situation?
Yeah, I think they should turn to Taylor Rogers. He's been great this year, 9-1 K to walk and 7 2/3 innings. He pitched 2 1/3 yesterday, scoreless innings yesterday. Came on in I think to get the last out of the sixth inning, and then came on through the eighth. Had three strikeouts. Saved 30 games for the Twins in 2019, nine last year. You know, great ground ball rate, nice speed on his fastball. I think it's just logical to go to him. But Hansel Robles, also in the Twins bullpen, saved 23 games for the Angels 2019. He's been doing okay this year. ERA is a bit high, but strikeouts are there, 9 and 7 innings. So he could be an option for him, too.
If you are a poor Colomé owner, do you hold him and hope that he gets better and gets it back, or are you cutting bait?
I think it depends on how, like, what the options are, right? Like, if Colomé is like your second closer and you have no one else, I think you kind of have to hold him. And there's, especially if there's nobody on the wire.
If Stephen Crichton is out there on the waiver wire, unlikely, but you never know. Some leagues are, you know, and leagues, are, you know, the leagues we play in aren't always the same experience as everybody else. So, say if he does happen to be out there, would you make that swap?
That's tough. probably right now. Or I would go pick up Taylor Rogers. Colomé hasn't been great. I mean, you know, and they have experienced options behind them. You know, if they're 6-11, they need to win some games. And if Colomé is not going to hold the wins for them, then, you know, of course the defense, you know, has to play better too. But, you know, they're expected to contend for the division. You know, right there with the White Sox and the Indians. So,
sure.
I mean, I would turn to those guys.
Speaking of Crichton, he's gotten the last two saves for the Diamondbacks. First time we've actually seen a pitcher used as a traditional closer for this team. Do you think the job is his?
Yeah, I think so. Devenski's injured. Soria's out. The Ginkle experience never came to fruition. Although he did work the eighth yesterday, I believe.
Yeah, and he actually got a couple of strikeouts, too.
Yeah, I actually did think Yoan Lopez was – he started great this year. I thought he might have a shot at it, but, you know, I guess they're going with what, you know, who they used last year.
Yeah. So. And the Torey Lovullo quote at the end of spring training, how he is inspired by Kevin Cash's usage of the Rays bullpen. I mean, that's kind of – come to fruition, except with lesser bullpen arms to begin with. I mean, he's had his choices back there haven't been that strong.
Yeah, I think the lack of quality options is kind of, you know, Crichton's just kind of been the benefactor of nobody else being very good.
Yeah, for that matter, the Rays don't have as many good options back there as they did in the past. So many injuries have decimated this bullpen. Diego Castillo blew a save yesterday. And, yeah, yep. Wild game. This is one of the... I think it was one of those days where the ball was flying in Kansas City too. But of course, he gave up. He gave up a walk and a single. Then the safety squeeze. He had a wild pitch mixed in there. Ugly, ugly game. But he's still pretty much. They've been almost forced to use him as a traditional closer more often than not, which is kind of weird to see.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Injuries to Pete Fairbanks, Nick Anderson. It's kind of forced their hand. I mean, Jeffrey Springs got a save the other day, gave up a couple of runs yesterday, I believe.
But, yeah, I got rightly punished for rostering Springs in AL Tout Wars. I thought I'd just take a flyer, see if he's like the 5-7 save guy for the season. And of course, he comes in the sixth or seventh inning and gives up 3 runs. You're like, ugh, good job, Jeff.
Right.
Well done. No Fairbanks, no Anderson, no McHugh, no Reed. Chaz Rose out for the year. Posh and Beeks were already out for the year. Oliver Drake's out for the year. That's a lot of arms down.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But yeah, they have to go back to the more traditional role because Castillo's the best pitcher left.
Right. Seattle, they did a non-traditional save on Monday. If Kevin O'Graveman is the closer, he came in as a fireman and got like 2 outs in the 7th and got 3 outs in the 8th. They let Montero get the save in the 9th. I still think Graveman's going to return some value from all those big fab bids over the weekend, but pretty frustrating if you just spent triple digits on him and then see him not get the next save opportunity.
Yeah, I didn't pick him up anywhere. Scott Service is, going to be pretty fluid with his bullpen. Montero will still get plenty of saves. Graveman will get some saves. I think they'll be similar to the Rays last year, where they just, right now Graveman is the highest leverage reliever in their bullpen, which should result in plenty of the saves. But I think when he came on Monday in the 7th, I think the pitcher before him put a couple guys on, so it was kind of like a cleanup. Mm-hmm. And then he got out of that and then pitched the 8th and then, Montero for the 9th. So, I still think you're right. He'll return some value still, but may not be as many save opportunities as people like, especially those who bid triple digits on him.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. Any other save situations you want to talk about? Maybe Detroit. Saw Gregory Soto got the save. Garcia had gotten some previously. They don't really have a declared closer either.
No, it's been pretty split between them. Jose Cisneros is an option too. 32-year-old, nice strikeout rate, but blew a save I think earlier this year. It'll be interesting to see who earns the most out of that pen. But I think it's one of them's the right. Garcia I think's the righty. Soto's the lefty. Yeah. I think they'll just play the matchups with him.
Could very well. I think Soto has pitched the tallest pitch of the season, 3-1,
right,
almost over the backstop. It was pretty impressive to see. But 11 Ks, 5 walks, and 8 and a third, and that pretty much encapsulates him. He throws really hard, but he has no idea where it's going. I feel like that. If you roster him and you have him active, don't watch his save chances. It's going to be kind of laborious is what I think is going to happen probably.
Right. Uncomfortable.
Yeah. Of course, I try not to watch your closer. Watch other people's closers. That's always been my rule of thumb anyhow.
Right. Exactly.
Before we get on to talking NFBC and also taking a couple of listener questions, quick note from our sponsor at Underdog. Football season approaches, and you've got to check out these new best ball leagues on Underdog. Best ball is the ultimate test of your live draft skills since there's no in-season management. That's right. Draft your team and Underdog automatically credits you with your best performing players every week. You don't need to play the waiver wire or worry about trades. It's just the draft. Who doesn't love drafting? In Underdog Best Ball, you can draft as many times as you want because you don't have to do any roster management, saving you loads of time. Underdog's best ball leagues are drafting right now, starting at just $3. Once the season starts, Underdog also has daily fantasy and an all-new Pick'em game. Go download the Underdog app now to get in on some best ball before the season starts. Enter promo code ROTOWIRE with your first deposit, and Underdog will honor a money-back guarantee during your first month. Love Underdog or get your money back with promo code ROTOWIRE. Search Underdog in your app store and enter promo code ROTOWIRE. My guest is Ryan Roof. He is the manager of the closer grid on ROTOWIRE. He also does very well in the NFBC. He's an Indians fan, and he's going to go ahead and jump on and, you know, and he's going to be playing the main event next year because he dominated. I shouldn't overstate it, but he won the Fanball Friday Night Daily contest to win a main event seat. So that was really good. Before we get into that, though, a couple of questions here. We'll hit these up real quick, Ryan, and then we'll jump on and go from there. But a couple of ones. Mike Carter asks, this is all closer-related questions. Are you ready to drop Column A or Garrett? Do we hang on with these guys?
Yeah, I think it depends on the other options that are available. If you're dropping them for like a surefire closer, a Neris or who's probably not available, but we talked about the swap from Column A to Crichton. Maybe do that. Crichton appears to have the role right now, but those guys will still get saves the rest of this year. May not be as many as you want, but they'll still get some. So, I think you kind of have to gauge who you're dropping them for and then who your other options are on your team.
Yeah. On a related note, another drop question. Nick Durazo asks, Garrett Pagan and Jose Alvarado worth holding on to in an NL only or safe drops if something intriguing comes up on the waiver wire? Because the nightmare is you drop a guy and then he ends up being the closer, like I did with Stephen Crichton actually in the main event.
Yeah. In an NL only, I think you hold those guys. I mean, because they're still useful even if they're not in a closer role. There's great ratio strikeout rates and could easily step into the role. So I think you kind of have to be careful. Not to say I wouldn't drop any of those guys. If somebody like Yimi Garcia comes out and takes the reins, sure, something like that. But, I wouldn't, they're still useful, at least on your roster.
Yeah. That Miami one, that's pretty much settled now. It's pretty much definitely him. So it's interesting. We got some breaking news, by the way.
Oh, go ahead.
Rob Beer Temple, he covers the Pirates for The Athletic, reports that Ke'Bryan Hayes re-aggravated his left wrist injury last night while taking high-velocity swings off a pitching machine. It happened on the same type of swing as before, and he's going to go see a specialist in Pittsburgh. So we're expecting him back this week. Not anymore.
That's tough. He was one guy I didn't get in drafts, but I really wanted.
Same.
And I really wanted him. So that's tough. I mean, he's really kind of the lone bright spot of the Pirates offense. So that's tough for them and their fan base. But we'll see how severe this ends up being.
Yeah. And it looks like Phil Evans is going to continue to get more playing time. He's actually been a Pirate that's done okay so far. Colin Moran have been all right. In a deep league, these guys matter.
Yep. Yeah. Evans been pretty good. Hitting almost 300, a couple home runs, four home runs. Wow. I thought it was less than that. That's great. So 28 years old, he should be able to step in and take advantage of that playing time that he's getting with Hazo.
Yeah. We lost him in the first week of the season. I mean, the hitter attrition has been wild. How many hitters we've lost? Liz and I were just talking yesterday about the top 80 according to NFBC main event ADP, and it's like 12 hitters versus 5 pitchers. Everyone was worried about the pitchers being the scarier investment, but it's been the hitter so far.
Yeah, it's strange how that works.
Yeah, I don't think there's my guess, and this is that I don't think it's like a case of Major League Baseball not being prepared for hitters, or like they're better prepared for pitchers. I think it's just been. I think it's more luck of the draw so far, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's early, you know.
So, all right. A couple other things I want to talk about. Ryan, congratulations. You're playing in the main event next year. You won the Friday Night DFS contest. Tell everybody about that. What was the entry fee? What did you do to win?
Yeah, so I actually was scrolling through Twitter. I saw a tweet from Phil Dussault about the qualifier. Didn't even know they existed. It's $50, 50 entries, it's the contest is 50 people max. You can enter up to three entries in it. I seem to have really good luck in qualifiers.
Nice.
In 2005, I qualified for the World Series of Poker main event in Las Vegas.
Really?
I did. Yeah, I played in the World Series of Poker.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Didn't make it out of the first day, but it was funny. I busted out like right before the end of day one, and around the same time that actress Mimi Rogers busted out. So we had a little, we commiserated a little bit together, took a picture. So
that's funny.
Fun experience. It was a lot of fun. But
how'd you qualify? Was it online or was it in a local casino? Because that's 2005.
It was a long time. This is when there were no restrictions on the U.S.
Right.
for online poker. So yeah, it was an online tournament that I qualified for. And it was just so much fun. Had a lot of fun. Hope it comes back, cause I would love to start playing online again. Just, do it with my buddies, for actual like significant money, it'd be nice to get in there again.
Yeah.
But, anyways, yeah, the fan ball contest, I'd never played on fan ball before. Had to educate myself on the scoring. Saw that, I play DFS on FanDuel mostly. So the scoring was way different than what I was used to. FanDuel, your pitchers tend to score a lot more. Strikeouts are weighted pretty heavily. Here on FanBall, I went with Scherzer as my pitcher. He had a great matchup against the Diamondbacks. Didn't really like the other options that night. So went with Scherzer. He topped out around 30 points. But the hitters, especially extra base hits, seem to, score more, get more points for those. So started with Trout. New Scherzer and Trout would be pretty heavily owned in a 50-person tournament. So tried to be a little bit more unique with the rest of my roster. The pricing played with my mind a little bit there on FanBall too. Nelson Cruz was very cheap. I think he was like 5,100. I think against the lefty. I think they were facing Andrew Heaney too that night. So I was like, I should probably use him, but he'll be chalky. So I pivoted to Ohtani, who I think got a couple points that night. Cruz, I don't think got a hit, so it ended up paying off. But I knew the rest of my roster had to be a little bit, different than,
sure,
contrarian, so to speak. So Mitch Garver is a guy who had a really great night that night. He's a notorious lefty killer. Not really batting well against lefties this year, but in the past he has, and he had a good night that night against Heaney. So I think he had a home run, double, or something like that. So got really lucky. I'm super excited to play in the main event. I've been talking about playing it for years. I'm not super rich or anything, so unfortunately,
right,
I haven't been able to.
But you have played in, like you said, you're playing in some Draft Champions leagues, and you have played in the online championship before, right? And,
yep.
And you've done, and if I recall correctly, you had a really, you were way high up in the overall rankings one of the years on the online championship.
Yeah, 2018, the year Clay finished top 10, I finished top 15 in the online championship, so that was fun. It's been interesting. I've been playing NFBC for about 8 years, and only just this year looked at kind of like how I've been performing in the different form in the different contests. The online championship, I've won a league, the year I finished in the overall, my average finish is like 3.3 out of like 10 leagues or something like that over the years. So doing well in that format, but Draft Champions is, it's been terrible.
the 12 versus 15 is a big difference. And the lack
yeah,
of, and
so,
the lack, obviously the lack of pickups, it's a different,
right.
it requires a different skill set. And I don't know about you, but for me, usually I start, I usually start my draft season with draft champions leagues to get, it's one of the ways I try to get a better feel for the player pool, but
same.
And yep. You go deeper, but the problem too is you really need to know how to fill out those last roster spots there in the draft champions. So you're not, listed, you're not dealing with like vacancies and when injuries inevitably hit, cause they will hit.
Yeah. Those last 20 rounds are super important. I mean, I really, kind of approach those like, I'm probably going to need these players at some point this year. I mean, Kyle Isbell was a 50th round draft pick in my first draft champions league this year, and I was starting him week one, due to other injuries. Springer was out, so I had to use him. And
right.
So every round is important. So yeah, those 15 teamers are definitely a different beast. I have a lot of prep I need to do in order to prepare for the main event. I did join a main event qualifier this year just to kind of get, used to the 15 teamers with FAB.
Oh, good.
The whole FAB is a different beast when it's an actual main versus a main event qualifier. So
sure.
Trying to do my homework.
Yeah. But in this way you get a lower price point to get a better feel for it. I like it. Good stuff.
Yep.
And how about finally, we'll finish with another deep format, but it's a keeper format. That's the RotoWire Staff Keeper League, where you've won 3 out of the last 4 years. You've got a strong team again this year. What's the secret to your success besides trading with me?
I mean, really, I took over Derek Van Riper's franchise in 2015. He really just had a stacked roster, especially in the minors. We're talking Giolito, Jose Barrios, Devers, Corey Seager, Tim Anderson, Matt Olson. I mean, I really just had an embarrassment of riches to work with. And really, when you take over a team from someone, you want to make it your own. So I just kind of went on a flurry of trades with the entire league. And just kind of set the foundation for what I wanted the team to be. So ended up trading Corey Seager for Lindor and a minors eligible Aaron Nola at the time. So that trade worked out. Yep. And then it was funny you brought up Matt Latos on the podcast earlier this week, because I did trade him to you in 2016. With Wellington Castillo for Trey Turner. We'll just say that worked out in my favor.
And I had multiple shortstops. I had like two or three shortstops, and I'm like, and the thing is, if you're ever going to trade that elite shortstop prospect, make sure you get full value. I did not.
Yeah.
He did not get full value.
To be fair, Latos was pitching well early that year. He was lights out. So, and I think you were in contention. So, I think as far as trading goes, I have not been afraid to deal draft picks. I don't really weigh them, as heavily as other people in the league. I think I've traded my first round pick every year that I was in contention. Just because the minors and reserve portion of our draft, I mean, there's so many players valuable players you can pick up late in the draft. I think prior to last season, Tristan McKenzie was coming off an injury in 2019. He was one of my last round picks in the reserves. So I've been pretty crazy trading draft picks and just been aggressive in acquiring elite talent that's on expiring contracts. I think we made a trade together for Trout 1 year when he was expiring, and you were trying to rebuild. So
yeah, that one actually, I'm happy with the results of that. Although
yep.
Paddock not as much this year as in previous years. That he was part of that deal, but I also got a very good priced Muncie in that deal. And a third, there's another couple other options in that too. So yeah, it worked out pretty well. And the thing is, you got to leverage your chances to win. When you got a chance to win, you got to go hard. When you're especially an 18 team keeper league like that.
Yeah. And you got to obviously have a well-balanced roster. I mean, it's a deep, deep league. I mean, your roster, and we start 5 outfielders in the league. So, I mean, you're there's very little available on waivers. Yep. So having the depth is super important. In the reserves, I like to target multi-positional players just to have that roster flexibility. Guys like Enrique Hernandez, Mike Brousseau, I drafted this year.
Yeah.
Because I think three spots he was eligible at. So, and in the minors, I just like to target guys whose ETA is this season or next. I don't like playing the long game. I like to be competitive in my keeper dynasty leagues. So I want guys who are close to the majors. Paddock in 2018, Rosarena and Tristan McKenzie in 2020. Those were guys I targeted because I knew they were coming up. They had, you know, good minor league resumes. So I'm just looking for guys that are close to the big leagues.
That's a good idea. I think that's a good reminder. And, you know, of course, if you're rebuilding, the long game might be more apropos at some times. But usually the long game guys are also a little cheaper to acquire. But then again, sometimes like a Rosarena wasn't high on prospect list, but he was close. So that also came a little cheaper that way too as well in terms of draft costs. So yeah, I like that. I like that way of looking at that.
Ryan, yeah, I like great, to look.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. What you were saying.
Yeah, I like targeting those guys in like the 100 to 200 range, those hitters especially. I kind of look at their minor league resumes and just see like, okay, so this guy's pretty good, gets on base at a good clip, doesn't strike out too much. Your Rosarenas, I really like Jaron Duran from the Red Sox, especially for steals. He was a guy I picked up, so that's kind of like the range I target for hitters.
Very good. Who did you get this year in the draft?
This year I picked up Bobby Bradley, Brendan McKay, and DeMarcus Evans, reliever for the Rangers, who might step into the closer role at some point this year if he's healthy.
He was making some noise in spring.
Yeah, yeah. I did buy Torkelson in the draft, knowing after this year, this year is the year where all my high-priced or elite players are coming off their contracts, so... I will likely have to rebuild next year, so I bought Torkelson in the draft knowing that. It's the one regret, though, I have from this year's auction that I'd much rather use that for a player.
Process doesn't often work very well. I'll say that. You had McKinstry as a keeper going into this season. Impressive. That's another one, a good example of targeting a guy like that. Yep. So that's already borne some fruit, which is always nice. That's going to wrap up today's show. We got Clay and Todd tomorrow with two start starters. I want to thank you guys for listening. Thanks for sending us the questions. Good luck in your leagues. Please, as always, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It means a lot to us. I want to thank Ryan for joining me today, and good luck on all your leagues for the rest of this week. Take care.
Appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks for the time.
You bet.